This is Parenting for the Everyday, a podcast dedicated to meeting parents in the trenches of parenthood. We explore how our faith fits into our parenting. With the help of our guests, we are seeking practical tips on how the gospel can speak into our day-to-day parenting. From the easy stuff to the hard stuff, we want to talk about it all. This is Parenting for the Everyday. I'm Becca Alvarez.
And I'm Holly Dicandro.
And today we have Sarah Coons with us.
Hi.
And we are talking all things Easter.
Do I interject right now and say, we use the word Easter.
Totally.
We're going to use the word Easter, but it is interesting because I know, Sarah, your dad often corrects me when I use the word Easter and saying like, hey, we should be calling it Resurrection Sunday.
So, correct.
I don't know how deep we're going in this episode.
Is it bad I didn't know that? Am I less of a Christian?
Yes.
Probably.
No, it's actually been something as an adult.
Interesting, yeah.
Because I always grew up using Easter, Easter, Easter. And I'm telling you, it was Pastor Jim that really kind of held me accountable to be like, no, it's not Easter. What does Easter mean? This is Resurrection Sunday.
So why?
That is a great question, Becca. And I'm going to say why, but it's only because I did do research. I actually used AI.
Hey.
Wow, that's fancy.
To figure out. But I don't know if you guys know this.
Clearly, I do not.
The Easter Bunny has its origins in pagan fertility symbols associated with springtime. So what happened was in ancient Europe, when springtime was coming, they honored the goddess, I think you pronounce it Ostara, or almost like Easter,
that's where the word
right?
comes from.
And she represented fertility, rebirth, and the rising sun. So truly, Easter does have a lot of its origins in pagan rituals. So I can understand why that would probably be offensive to a lot of us in the Christian community, because we aren't celebrating those things. We are celebrating the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus.
To be fair, I still use the word Easter all the time.
I think most of us
do. It's interesting that where that comes from.
Right.
All right. Should we jump in?
To jump
Let's
in pretty
do
deep.
It. All right. So Easter has sometimes been called the Super Bowl of Christian holidays.
Yeah.
It also and so, feels a little pagan.
A little bit.
Speaking of pagan things we say.
Just using current culture.
Current lingo.
Yeah.
AI.
I want to be relevant.
Yeah.
Why do we say this? Why is Easter such a big holiday in the Christian community?
Yeah. I think we would all agree on this, but I think it's because it is the heart of the gospel. Mm-hmm. This is when we celebrate, like if you begin on Palm Sunday, which is the week before Resurrection Sunday, that's when Jesus was entering, right, into Jerusalem. And that's when that kind of began that week of prior to his death on the cross, and then 3 days later, his resurrection. And so that is the center of everything we believe. Like, if Jesus did not die or resurrect on the third day, everything that we talk about in the Bible, everything we believe, isn't true. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I think something that I as a parent have struggled with is that we put a lot of emphasis on Christmas right. and Advent and doing all of these things to prepare our hearts and our families for that, which is really great because, Christmas is the incarnation of Jesus. That's when he was born and he took on human flesh. But then it comes to Easter and it feels like we kind of just like fast forward a little bit, and then all of a sudden it is like Palm Sunday and we're like, oh, right, that's happening. And we haven't even taken the time to like prepare our hearts and our families for Easter, which is like, without Easter, there is no Christmas. So like, I just think we need to maybe help parents, help ourselves in preparing for Easter. And there's a lot of good things, and we can talk about that at the church, that we do, that we can point people towards. But I think there's a lot of other things we can talk about and resources and all those good things.
Yeah, I think the way I think about it too is that Christmas is kind of about hope, right? It's a sign that God himself is coming mm-hmm. for us. He's coming to complete his rescue plan.
Right.
He's coming to bring us back to him, but Easter's where he does it. you know? Mm-hmm. And it's, I heard an analogy once where it was like, Christmas is where God writes the check and Easter is where he signs it. Mm. And it's like, okay, yeah, they work so much together. But we do as a society, we elevate Christmas yeah. almost over Easter. And that's really backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we elevate most holidays over Easter. You know, I think if you were asking someone, what's your favorite holiday? Easter might not even be in the running.
Right.
But I love that we're talking about it now because I do think that it's really important. And I think that as you are setting the tone for your family or traditions, this is something that you can start now of making it important and preparing your children to understand the importance of Easter, that it's not just kind of that forgotten holiday.
Yeah. Well, and focusing on the right things.
Right.
You know, like I think it is even us calling it Easter rather right. than Resurrection Sunday. Like it's like our kids, their minds are going to instantly probably go to an Easter egg hunt
yeah.
and chocolate and Easter baskets, which in and of themselves are not
bad
not harmful, things.
Yeah.
Right. But I think even when we did talk about Santa, which if you haven't listened to that episode, you should. I think if you are keeping Jesus at the center of your family throughout the year, then those things don't outweigh, you know, what Jesus did for us on the cross and then resurrecting 3 days later. But I think it can be confusing to kids sometimes if we're not taking the time to actually prepare for the holiday.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's also a little bit of a difficult thing to explain. You know, I was talking to my son today, and we talk about, he calls Jesus Baby G. We talk about Baby G, and we talk about different things. But then when you think about how to really explain to him, mm-hmm. the crucifixion is a little intense. So how do you do that, especially with younger kids?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sarah.
I love that. It's like, you're the expert. You're in kids' ministry. I think the first thing I would always point to are, I just, because I think this is how Matt and I did with our kids, is just like really good resources, books. Obviously, nothing will substitute the Word of God.
Yeah.
But I would say the Jesus Storybook Bible is a excellent, excellent resource. It is not a direct quote from the Bible, but it takes the Bible and puts it in language that kids can understand. And so even if it's just like you're reading through, you know, the story of Palm Sunday and then the Last Supper and then the, you know, the time that Jesus is in the garden to the time where, you know, he's on trial to the crucifixion to the resurrection. Like, they do an excellent job in laying that out in language that kids understand. So there's lots of good books we're going to recommend that we are going to put out when this podcast drops, and we'll put it even on our social media so you can see those. But I think, too, like, you do have to, like, for Zeke, who's two, I'm not sure if he would completely understand everything about it.
But
it is exactly.
You start, laying that foundation.
Yeah.
And I you got a book here, and nobody yes. can see it except unless you're watching. But, no, the bottom one.
Oh.
This is my favorite. It's called The Garden, The Curtain, and The Cross. And it is... You can start reading it to your kids when they're babies, mm-hmm. and you could read it to adults to really basically explain the gospel in simple words.
I love
and
that.
It is like, hey, we read it every year we read it on Easter Sunday every year. And it is such a good way, even as an adult, to be reminded of some simple mm-hmm. things that are done. It's funny. I think that this is something that we really don't want to miss. And I think sometimes we spend so much time on, like, the, you know, Jesus died for our sins and on Good Friday and the crucifixion. And that is a pivotal part that we sometimes miss. Like, why do we care? Why does it matter? Mm-hmm. You know, what happened? And, you know, we say, like, he is risen. And we stop there and it's like, he's risen indeed. And my favorite part of the verse is the second part, like in Matthew, where it says, like, he is risen just as he said he would. Mm-hmm. And it's like, at least for me, as my kids get older, I'm really trying to hammer in that second point of saying that that's what makes him trustworthy. It means that God does what he says he's going to do. It means that he not only keeps his promises, but he has the power to keep it. And so then we've got this opportunity to be like, why do we care? Because when he says he's good and he'll never leave us, he makes good on his promises. And so I think that's the part of the resurrection I'm trying to pull out for my kids, of meaning that it's really that resume building of God is who he says he is, and he does exactly what he's going to say, what he said he would do, even to the point of the crucifixion.
Yeah.
I love that, because that too creates a thread that you can pull throughout the entire year, not just Resurrection Sunday, but all the different times when your kids are struggling with something of, hey, but remember, we point back to Resurrection Sunday because he did what he said he's going to do, and he will do that now, even though it's July,
right.
You know, that
right.
You can kind of use that same thread and that same theme throughout the entire year.
Yeah,
I love that.
I actually, it's funny, in the past few years, not few years, probably in a lot of my adulthood, even in some serious times of waiting, I've been really drawn to the Saturday of the Easter story, and this idea that like everybody talks about Good Friday, and Good Friday doesn't become good until, you know, Resurrection Sunday happens. But there's this day in between, you know, when all the disciples are like, we messed up.
Yeah.
We're terrified. Shoot. What are we going to do? Mm-hmm. God isn't who he said he is.
Right.
This is a, you know, and it's like you want to go back and you want to be like, but Sunday's coming. Right. And so that's like been something that has stuck to me in seasons of waiting, that I feel like I always find myself throughout the year being like, but Sunday's coming. But Sunday's coming.
Yeah.
And so that's a really cool piece that you can point out to your kids, even on Saturday. Like, hey, if you were the disciples, you know, especially with little kids, what would you be doing right now? You know, of course, they're like, I wouldn't be scared. I know that he said, you know, and you're like, really? Would you? Like, think about it. And you really set the scene, and you can really kind of play up like what that experience would be.
Yeah, for sure.
And what a beautiful thing, even just the fact that God chose for there to be time, you know, that Saturday existed, that it wasn't just Friday and then Saturday he's up and we're good and let's go. Because I think that people needed that hope, because we all go through those waiting seasons, those seasons of not being sure of what is going to happen and how is this going to turn out, that God gave us that Saturday to know that hope is still there, that he is coming, that Sunday is coming. I really like that. I'm going to use that.
Yeah. I have to say, Jesus Storybook Bible. I can't say it enough.
It's great.
Yeah.
It is.
But
great.
this is why I want to read a little bit of this, because I think it clearly demonstrates how well they take something that, like you said, Becca, can be really hard to talk to kids about, and just do it in a way that they would understand it. So this is on Sunday morning. It says, Jesus' friends were sad. They would never see their best friend again. How could this happen? Wasn't Jesus the rescuer, the King God had promised? It wasn't supposed to end like this. Yet, but whoever said anything about the end? And then it just goes in to talk about like how Mary goes and sees, you know, the angel, and she's saying all this stuff. And it's like, oh, like, isn't that great language for a child to understand? Mm-hmm. Like, I would be really sad. And I love, Holly, that you even said, like, ask your kids those questions. Like, they know the end of the story, which is great. But what would it feel like if you were one of Jesus' disciples? Like, this is like you have become so close with this person, and now he dies this incredibly painful, humiliating death. They're watching this happen. They see him buried, his body buried, and then you're like, what? Like, I thought he was going to be it for us.
Did we get it wrong?
Right. Exactly.
Right.
So I think it's just like, those are really good questions to try to get your kids to kind of see, like, well, what would that feel like? What would that be like if you were one of those disciples and you were thinking, wait a minute.
When honestly,
I didn't think this was the end.
Sunday is better when you've sat in Saturday, like to your point.
You
could have skipped it, but Sunday is better when you've just spent time like, you really had us?
Yeah.
You were coming through. You know, you felt that agony. This is interesting, Sarah, that you have this one.
Yeah.
I literally just bought this one, A Jesus Easter, Exploring God's Amazing Rescue Plan. And it's a everyday devotional. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try this one. We've done some workbooks in the past, because that's what you do at Advent. And so I've been trying to, in the past couple years, been like, okay, how do we do this at Easter if we do it at Christmas? And they have the cards where you can go through the story and kind of set it up just like Christmas. Because it's so close to Christmas, I was trying to do something like a little bit different. So this is what I bought this year.
Yeah.
and you're saying it's good since you brought it. Right?
I'm excited about it. The kids team loves this. It's a 30-day devotional, which I really like, again, that it's giving you a lot of time. I'm sure lots of us have heard about Lent, right? We hear that in a lot of different, like the Christian community. But Lent is the 40 days preceding Easter. And in early centuries, Lent was observed with a very strict fast. But I saw this quote from a pastor I really like, and he said, "Should we, like many, choose to fast something for the next 40 days, may it be for increasing our hunger for you, Jesus." And I love that idea because I think Lent has taken on this almost a secular version of giving something up, like, oh, I'm going to give up chocolate,
I'm going to give up sugar, or even social
media. Again, not bad things. Right. Like, those aren't bad things, but why are you giving that up? And I love this idea of, like, actually, what I want is I want to fast because I want my hunger for Jesus to grow. And I think if we can do things that help our kids continue to learn more about Jesus, grow in their love for Jesus, like, that's great. And so, like, we really love this resource. It would be one we would highly recommend.
Yeah, it's interesting because I didn't grow up in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And so Lent's definitely become more of a secular thing. But yeah. I think back in the day, at least when we were growing up, it was pretty reserved for maybe a more like traditional Catholic mm-hmm. church. And so I haven't really even learned about or understood what it was until even being an adult. But I think the heart of it and this idea, like you're saying,
it's really
prepare
good.
Your heart for what's about to happen so that you can receive this gift with a full heart and a full understanding of what it really means, you know, outside of the chocolate eggs.
Yeah.
I also didn't grow up in the Catholic Church. And so my mom, to this day, like this happened this past Wednesday, will remind me whenever it is Ash Wednesday to not take the smudge off of anyone's forehead in case I am feeling like I should.
She is very curious.
She is. Like, she is about the most really caring.
Love your mom. Yeah. She's the best. Like, that's it. Like, that's the stuff, like, most insensitive people like me would never think to recognize or say.
There's like resurrection eggs.
Yeah, that's another thing. I love resurrection eggs.
I've never done them with my kids, actually, which feels off-brand.
That really
surprised
me. It does feel
off-brand. I know, but I haven't.
I will say, I think resurrection eggs, there's lots of different versions, but they're mostly pretty the same. But that's great because there's these 12 eggs and there's different items in each of those eggs. And usually it comes with a little workbook that walks you through, like, the significance of each of those items, you know, whether it's praying hands, like Jesus was praying in the Garden of Gethsemane, or the silver coins, you know, that Judas was given, or, a cup from the Last Supper, it gives you the scripture that it comes from. And so you can walk through, and you could even make it fun where you like hide the different eggs and the kids go to try to find them and they're labeled with numbers and then you kind of walk through it. And that's honestly for elementary age kids, that's a really powerful tool to use because they like the object, you know, to see it and then giving it why it's important and what part it plays in the story of Easter. Yeah.
Have you done, probably not, but maybe this would be the first year you could do them with Ezekiel, the empty tomb rolls.
So that I like where this is going.
It's really like you put a marshmallow.
Now this feels on brand.
This
for you.
Does feel on brand.
It's really cool though for your kids to start because
we might do this.
Ezekiel
today.
He can't fully comprehend it yet, right? Yeah. And so, but you take a marshmallow and you put it like when you make your rolls that you would put in the oven, you stuff the marshmallow in the middle. And you have him do it. He stuffs it. He knows the marshmallow is there. The marshmallow melts in the oven. And so when you break open these rolls that you've built, they're empty. And so it's just, again, getting your kid to be lost in the awe and wonder of like, it's empty. It's empty. And then really be able to connect it to like, because the tomb was empty. And what does it mean for us that the tomb is empty? Why do we care? And I think those little silly practical things are really fun ways to engage kids in a bigger concept.
Mm-hmm. We will certainly be doing that. We may be doing that a couple times before Easter as well.
He'll be so excited.
So we talked about kind of making it come alive for your toddler, child, middle schooler. What do you do for a high schooler? How do you kind of bring them into the story, keep it powerful, really explaining that message in a way that they can, because at this point, they can really understand.
Yeah. No, that's true. I think high schoolers are a special group. I think for me, even as a parent of older kids, you're right. Like they completely mentally can understand it. I think for me, it's always about once they reach that age, even in middle school, like, okay, has that traveled from your head to your heart?
Yeah.
And like, has that made a difference in your heart? Have you made that decision to follow Jesus? Do you actually believe this to be true? So I think there are powerful things that the church, CCC, does that would be really great for middle school and high schoolers. One of that is the Door to or D2 Interactive Worship Experience.
That's so cool.
Yes. And that's where you're walking through different... What would you call those? I would call them response stations because it's like kids'
experiences.
Yeah. Okay,
it's much better.
Where, man, that is powerful. It's so like powerful. Yeah. So I would say like that would be an excellent thing, and I think that's happening pretty much the entire week before Easter is something that you could participate in, but I think even just taking time out of your day, like kind of like what we do around Christmas. It's really easy to sit around the dinner table and say, like, let's read this verse. There's lots of things you can do that with different verses. Even this resource we were talking about, I think this could be done for all different ages of kids. I think it's just keeping them mindful of it and keeping them. I think it's another thing. It's easy for us growing up in the Christian community to be like, right, Jesus died and he rose again. That's great. That's cool. Really understand the significance of that and what that means. And if he hadn't done that, what would that mean for us? That hope that you talk about, there is none. You know, so Jesus creates, like, he finished, you know, that rescue plan that he initiated even at the beginning of time. Like, this, none of this came to him as a surprise. He knew sin was going to enter the world. There's brokenness in our world. But we have the hope of because of what Jesus did for us. And maybe just letting them really rest in that and find a lot of peace in that as well, I think is really good.
Yeah, I got to echo that D2 Holy Week experience. I've taken my kids and it's really great even to walk through with my middle schooler. Just lets you immerse yourself even in like smells and different like tactile things, you know. You're writing, you're actually saying like, okay, this is what I'm struggling with. I'm nailing this to the cross. What does it mean? This is my sin. And so I think anything that you can do to connect something that can seem kind of like a far off, this like doesn't apply to me, this, and you can connect it to be really real is huge. And I think those, sometimes we put too much of an emphasis on like, what's the experience that we're going to give to our kids that is going to make them move closer to Easter. And I think some of it is just those casual conversations of saying like, man, I'm so thankful for Resurrection Sunday because this year has been really hard for this, or because I know that my sin is, you know, them hearing you talk about it is going to start to like help those seeds to grow and the Lord will water that.
We talked a little bit about the kind of pagan roots at the very beginning of this episode. What are opinions that we have about some of those different traditions, whether it be the Easter bunny or Easter baskets or Easter egg hunts? What should we be doing, ladies?
Holly?
What's funny is, you know, if you listen to the Santa episode, you probably felt my passion in my answer.
That's a great way to articulate
the word we're to use. I actually, you know, might surprise people. I actually don't do the Easter bunny in my house. I feel like it is very different from Santa Claus, and I don't want to go too deep into that because I know people are going to be like, what about this? What about this? But I feel like the roots of where the Easter bunny comes from and the concept around it is radically different than the original roots and the generosity that starts with Santa Claus and the way we connect it to Jesus's birth. In my house, for my family, the Easter bunny has felt different, and it has never felt like something that fit naturally into our rhythms around Easter. So my kids are too old to introduce such a thing now. So we have never done it. We do Easter baskets and Easter eggs and color Easter eggs and do some of those more secular activities. But I think there are ways to incorporate of like, hey, we're dyeing Easter eggs. Why are we so excited about Easter? And kind of talk about it while we're, you know, while we're dyeing eggs. I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer here. And so this is more like a personal, this is what my household does.
Yeah. I don't think Easter baskets or Easter egg hunts or coloring Easter eggs in and of themselves are a bad thing. I think they're fun things to do with your kids, all of those types of things. But what's great is that I feel like, and we would all agree with this, like Jesus is bigger than that. Like, so I think the cool thing is like, there really doesn't, in at least in my household, there's really no competition between if I give my child an Easter basket and we color Easter eggs and then Jesus. Jesus wins. We know that. So I think it's just one of kind of like yours, just like a fun thing to do
keep
with
the main
them.
Thing, the main thing though.
Exactly. So yeah. I wouldn't, I'm not opposed to families doing that. I think though, when it becomes the thing,
and that's what, you know,
and that's what we're focusing on and driving our celebration, then I'd be like, well, yeah, maybe we need to reorient a little bit
so
around that.
I have something to kind of round table with you guys. So in talking about the crucifixion, I have struggled. There are so many different like movies and visuals about the crucifixion. And I've really struggled at knowing, like, I want my kids to see that this is really hard and I want them to feel the pain of the crucifixion and be able to lament the price that Jesus paid on our behalf. But I also am cautious of like, I don't know how, what to expose them at.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the Passion of the Christ.
It's very
violent. I'll use that as an example. That's
violent.
An R-rated movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've got a kid who's asking to watch that. And I, you know, I was like, well, it's R-rated because that's what happened to Jesus. Why can't I see that? That's what he did for me. And I'm like, I don't know. So yeah. Like, what are your thoughts on that kind of exposure?
Yeah. Oh man, that's hard. Cause I'm definitely tend to err. Like I won't always, I don't want to like sugarcoat things for my kids. I want to be honest. But I also think there's wisdom and discernment around saying like, is a 7-year-old
ready
to watch them? Because I remember watching The Passion of the Christ and I was sobbing because I think it was one of the first times I saw that portrayed in a probably very realistic way. And it was intense.
How old were you?
So intense.
I mean,
probably like 30. I
don't think you're that old because I think it came out when I was in high school.
I was gonna say, okay. I think I was like 13.
Yeah. So yeah. You were just
right,
out.
Not
yeah.
even close.
So yeah,
to 30.
I mean, I was an adult, you know. So I think now, do I think I'm like a 14-year-old right could handle that? Possibly, because there's even other things in that movie. I remember even how Satan was portrayed.
Yeah.
Like I was like, whoa. I mean, it was very powerful. But there were even elements of that I was like, wow, that's intense. But it's powerful. It would make it. But I think for some kids, it could have the, you know, they could be traumatized by that. So I think there is something, like you said, you don't want to like scare your kids or hot, but you also don't want to portray like, yeah, I mean, he died and
that's
great.
Sad. Yeah.
It wasn't pretty. It was, I mean, even if you think about how he was tried and his trial and even like, I think about just even Pilate going out to the people and be like, well, who do you want me to release? Do you want me to release Barabbas, who they know was a known criminal,
terrible.
Right?
Yeah.
Or Jesus. And they're all shouting, Jesus, Jesus. And I'm like, I know he's God and everything, but like even the betrayal, the injustice of it, the betrayal, like there's just so many parts and pieces of this that I think like you do want your kids to understand what he endured for them. Like I always want to make it super personal. Like Jesus would have done this for you, Hannah.
Just you, Noah.
Yeah.
You're the only
like,
one.
I need you to know that. And when you really get that, when I talk about that, traveling from your head to your heart, that's hard to deny, like the sacrifice that Jesus made for you.
But you're right. There's so many parts of the story outside of the.
So maybe it's even part of
even
say,
the Barabbas part is the idea of like, we're Barabbas.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's like wild to think about like, what do we deserve? Where should we be? You know? And
Actually, there's this song, like Hannah was playing it for me, and it was saying like, we are Barabbas, you know, like what Jesus did for us. So it's just, I think there are a lot of things that maybe, okay, my child isn't probably ready to watch The Passion of the Christ, but we are, let's really dive into this and talk about like all these different parts, like even thinking about Jesus praying in the garden saying like, God, if there's any other way, like he knew.
Yeah.
But he was, I mean, he was so, I don't know if it was saddened, but just like burdened by it, saying like, hey, if there's any other way, like it was the ninth hour and he was still going to this, but he's still like saying, okay, here am I, you know, when they came to take him away, all these things. So, Yeah, I think we forget about all these different parts of the story that we should be telling our kids about too. Yeah, for sure.
I forgot to mention it earlier too. The Chronicles of Narnia is a good opportunity.
That would be a good one.
Yeah, I was actually reading an article just in thinking about this episode, and it was talking about different movies that kind of have the same kind mm-hmm. of like plot series
the theme,
the theme of like, hey, this is something that's really bad. The main hero is mistreated. There's this period of lament, and then things are redeemed. And how something your dad always says is like, it doesn't have to be this big churchy thing to talk about these real concepts. You can, you know, have a family movie night around a movie that isn't necessarily about the crucifixion mm-hmm. and have a conversation about the crucifixion.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, what do we see here, you know, in this period of time? Mm-hmm. And so I was just thinking about that along with like actually the Chronicles of Narnia. We just went through that with my 7-year-old and it clicked for them for the first mm-hmm. time. And, you know, I'm watching them and, you know, my daughter saying she's getting teary and she's like, but he shouldn't die. He didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. It wasn't him, mm-hmm. you know, and it was really cool. I like paused and I was like, okay, what does this remind you of? And so I think there's really cool opportunities to use maybe non-Easter themed resources
that.
And still, again, mm-hmm. not just at this time of year, but always just bringing it back to the heart of the gospel.
Yeah, I think that all of that is so important and such a fun way to do it, too, as opposed to not saying that the Bible is not fun. It is so fun.
Well,
but
fun in a different way.
Can be
I can
tough.
Understand that.
It is hard
to just read
to
your kids.
Just read. Makes it relatable. It makes it all of a sudden like, oh, I understand what's being said there.
Yeah.
But we do that with other things. Like, I think we're not, like, I think it's when we say, like, hey, here's a medical, you're sick. We don't say, like, hey, you have influenza A and this is this and this. We're saying, hey, your body got some germs in it. And we, you know what I mean? You are kind of making it more digestible.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so I really want to end this with the Jesus Storybook Bible, right? Like at the very end. It makes me happy. Okay, so this is the angel talking to Mary and the other women. And he says, what are you doing here? This is a tomb, and tombs are for dead people. The women couldn't speak. Jesus isn't dead anymore, he said. He's alive again. And their hearts leapt. And then the angel laughed with such gladness that they felt for a moment as if they had woken from a nightmare. And then this is when Jesus comes to Mary in the garden. And he says, Mary. And he said, only one person said her name like that. She could hear her heart thumping. She turned around. She could just make out a figure. She shaded her eyes to see and thought she was dreaming. But she wasn't dreaming. She was seeing Jesus. Mary fell to the ground. Sudden tears filled her eyes and great sobs shook her whole body. And all she wanted in that moment was to cling to Jesus and never let him go. You'll be able to hold on to me later, Mary, Jesus said gently, and always be close to me. But now go and tell the others that I'm alive. Mary ran and ran all the way to the city. She had never run so fast and so far in all her life. She felt she could have run forever. She didn't even feel like her feet touched the ground. The sun seemed to be dancing and gleaming and bouncing across the sky, racing with her and shining brighter than she could ever remember in the clear, fresh air. And it seemed to her in that morning, as she ran, almost as if the whole world had been made anew. Almost as if the whole world was singing for joy. The trees, tiny sounds in the grass, the birds, her heart. Was God really making everything sad come untrue? Was he making even death come untrue? She couldn't wait to tell her Jesus's friends. They won't believe it, she laughed. She was right, of course. And that is the story. Like, God is making all things sad untrue.
What a great way to end. This has been Parenting for the Everyday. Tune in next time.